The headline is Jeffrey Epstein Autopsy. It points to homicide, not suicide. Evidence suggests he didn't die by suicide, instead he may have been strangulated. Jeffrey Epstein's death has been officially ruled a suicide, but there's more to it than meets the eye. Was it the perfect crime or an elaborate cover-up? None of my business. What concerns me is my brother's murder. Dr. Michael Baden, hired by Epstein's own brother, has come up with shocking evidence that Epstein was not the victim of suicide, but may have been murdered. Ever since this revelation, who killed Jeffrey Epstein, it's been the only question on everyone's mind. Let's find out in this video. The death of Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein passed away on August 10, 2019, before his trial could begin. There are differing opinions about how he died. Some think it was suicide, others believe he was murdered, or it could be something else entirely. We'll explore several theories and their confusing undercurrents. The official version is that he took his life by hanging himself in his cell at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York. However, many people doubt this and are skeptical of this explanation. Let's rewind a bit. On July 23, 2019, Epstein was found unresponsive in his cell with marks on his neck, raising concerns that he might have attempted suicide. He was placed on suicide watch, a precautionary measure to ensure his safety. In a suicide prevention cell, Epstein's every move was closely monitored and he was denied any means he could use to harm himself. However, just 6 days later, on July 29, Epstein was removed from suicide watch. The decision to do so raises serious questions about the judgment of those responsible for his welfare. How is it possible that a man with a history of suicide attempts is no longer considered a threat to himself? Once removed from suicide watch, Epstein was transferred to the MCC's Special Housing Unit, commonly known as the SHU. This unit houses the most notorious and notorious criminals, such as El Chapo. It is a place where extra precautions should have been taken to ensure the safety of the inmates. Now, here's where things take a disturbing turn. Epstein, a man who is 7 feet tall, managed to take his own life by hanging himself in his cell. This grisly revelation raises serious questions about the conditions in which he was being guarded. How is it possible that a man with such a high-profile case was left unsupervised long enough to carry out such a drastic act? Things get even more suspicious because it seems that the guards who were supposed to be watching Epstein were asleep and failed to check on him properly. This mistake has led people to wonder if there was foul play. It is said that the guards lied on their logs, pretending to be on more watch than they actually were. This dishonesty has led people to doubt the official explanation of what happened and to believe that there could be hidden details surrounding Epstein's death. Additionally, autopsy results are causing people to question how Epstein died. Dr. Michael Baden, a prominent expert hired by Epstein's brother, argues that Epstein's injuries do not resemble those typically seen in suicides by hanging. Dr. Baden, an expert, noticed something odd about Epstein's neck injuries. Typically, when someone hangs themselves, only a small bone in the neck is broken, but Epstein had multiple broken bones, which is rare and points to another cause of death. Dr. Baden believes Epstein's injuries are more similar to strangulation, where pressure on the neck causes this type of injury. This raises a suspicious point. Epstein may have been murdered, not killed. There is a theory that Epstein did not commit suicide, but rather received help, perhaps because he feared facing punishment for his crimes and a long prison term. This idea raises questions about who may have helped him and their motives. Some believe that the Clintons were involved in Epstein's death to protect themselves. They believe the Clintons wanted to prevent Epstein from sharing damaging information about them. According to this theory, Epstein had evidence against the Clintons and his death was a way to prevent him from speaking out and keep the Clintons out of legal trouble. Epstein's case becomes more intriguing because at the time of his death, Zelda's partner was Nicholas Tartaglione, a burly former police officer facing murder charges. Their pairing is an odd one given their different backgrounds. There are suspicions that Tartaglione may have been involved in Epstein's death, possibly to help keep Epstein quiet. Let's take a look at all the details leading up to his death. It all began in March 2005 when police in Palm Beach, Florida, launched an investigation into Jeffrey Epstein after the family of a 14-year-old girl alleged that she had been sexually abused at his lavish mansion. As the investigation unfolded, more and more chilling details emerged. Several underage girls, many of them high school students, came forward to reveal that Epstein had hired them to provide him with sexual massages. The scope of the allegations was staggering and marked the beginning of a long and arduous road to justice. The case against Epstein gained momentum in May 2006, when Palm Beach police signed papers charging him with multiple counts of unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor. However, the county's top prosecutor, Barry Krischer, made a controversial decision. Instead of moving forward with the charges, he sent the case to a grand jury. The move created controversy and drew criticism from those who believed Epstein was receiving special treatment. Finally, in July 2006, Epstein was arrested after a grand jury indicted him on a single count of prostitution. The charge, however, seemed to downplay the seriousness of the allegations against him. Critics, including Palm Beach police chiefs, were quick to express their concerns, accusing Krischer of giving Epstein preferential treatment. Public outrage grew as it became clear that Epstein's powerful connections could influence the course of justice. The FBI took notice and launched an investigation into Epstein's activities. As the FBI delved deeper into the case, federal prosecutors began preparing an indictment against Epstein. What followed, however, was a year of intense negotiations between Epstein's lawyers and Miami U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta. Discussions centered on a possible plea deal that would allow Epstein to avoid federal prosecution. Epstein's lawyers vehemently argued that his accusers were unreliable witnesses, seeking to undermine their credibility and cast doubt on their claims. The battle for justice was far from over, and the victims' fight for accountability had only just begun. In June 2008, Epstein's case took a surprising turn. He pleaded guilty to the charges against him, admitting to one count of prostitution and one count of soliciting a minor under the age of 18. The plea deal resulted in a sentence of just 18 months in prison, a punishment that many considered inadequate for the severity of his crimes. But the controversy didn't end there. In a secret agreement, the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed not to prosecute Epstein on federal charges, effectively shielding him from further consequences. This lenient plea deal raised serious questions about the integrity of the justice system and its protection of vulnerable individuals. During his sentence, Epstein enjoyed a work release program that allowed him to leave prison during the day and return at night, further fueling public outrage. In July 2009, Jeffrey Epstein was released from prison, ending his 18-month sentence. However, for the victims who had bravely come forward, the fight for justice was far from over. Over the next decade, several women claiming to be victims of Epstein waged a legal battle to have his federal non-prosecution agreement overturned and to hold him and others accountable for the abuse they suffered. One of the most prominent accusers, Virginia Duffrey, alleged that beginning when she was just 17, Epstein and his girlfriend Ghislaine Maxwell orchestrated sexual encounters with powerful men, including Britain's Prince Andrew. In November 2018, the Miami Herald published a series of stories examining the handling of the Epstein case. The stories focused in part on the role of Alexander Acosta, who by then had become President Donald Trump's labor secretary. The coverage renewed public interest in the case and raised serious questions about the plea agreement that had allowed Epstein to escape more serious consequences. Media scrutiny and public pressure eventually led to significant developments. In the July 6, 2019 case, Epstein was arrested once again, this time on federal sex trafficking charges. Federal prosecutors in New York concluded that they were not bound by the terms of the previous non-prosecution agreement and were determined to hold Epstein accountable for his actions. The fallout from Epstein's arrest was swift and far-reaching. Just days after his arrest, Alexander Acosta resigned as Labor Secretary amid public outrage over his role in the initial investigation and controversial plea deal. Public sentiment was growing, demanding answers and accountability, and victims were hopeful that justice would finally be served. However, the case took another shocking turn on August 10, 2019, when guards at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City found Epstein dead in his cell. Despite Epstein's death, the investigation into his alleged crimes continued. The focus shifted to Ghislaine Maxwell, his former girlfriend and alleged accomplice. On July 2, 2020, federal prosecutors in New York charged Maxwell with sex crimes, accusing her of helping to recruit underage girls for Epstein and, at times, participating in the abuse herself. Maxwell's arrest brought hope to victims that justice would finally be served and that those who enabled Epstein's actions would be held accountable. After a month-long trial, a jury returned its verdict on December 30, 2021. Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty of multiple charges, including sex trafficking, conspiracy, and transportation of a minor for legal sexual activity. The conviction marked a significant milestone in the quest for justice for Epstein's victims. Finally, on June 28, 2022, Ghislaine Maxwell was sentenced to 20 years in prison for her role in the abuse of teenage girls. The sentence provided a sense of closure for victims and a glimmer of hope that the wounds inflicted by Epstein and Maxwell would begin to heal. Following the conviction of Ghislaine Maxwell, attention has turned to Jeffrey Epstein's private island. This led to shocking discoveries about the island that in turn sparked new conspiracy theories about Epstein's death. What you don't know about the man and his island: there's a unique temple on Jeffrey Epstein's island that has caught people's attention. It's a blue-striped building that looks like a temple with a gold dome on top. Some say it was used as a music hall where Epstein, who was a pianist, would perform. But others believe there may be more to it. One interesting theory is that the temple had a hidden elevator that could take people to a secret underground location on the island. However, a contractor who worked there didn't buy this theory. He found it unlikely that there was an elevator inside the temple. However, he did notice something unusual about the door to the temple. The door to the temple on Epstein Island had an unusual and huge piece of wood that acted as a giant lock. This surprised people and made them wonder why such a strange locking mechanism was used. Normally, if you wanted to keep people out, you would put the lock inside the building, but in this case the lock was on the outside, as if its purpose was to keep people in. This strange door and lock make Epstein Island even more mysterious. It suggests that there was a lot of secrecy and control within the temple walls. People are curious about what happens behind that door and what secrets are hidden within. These questions continue to intrigue those who investigate the mysteries of Jeffrey Epstein Island. When Jeffrey Epstein was on his island, he was very fond of finding hidden treasures, especially those related to pirates and buried riches. He even told his employees to be on the lookout for valuables. If they found something interesting, like an old bottle of rum, a special plate, or any valuable item, he would give them a large sum of money ranging from a few dollars to depending on how important the item was. This made the island seem like a fun place to go treasure hunting. The employees on the island were like modern-day pirates. They searched for hidden gems everywhere. They would carefully search the sand, explore the dense trees and bushes, and even dive into the crystal-clear waters surrounding the island in hopes of finding a piece of history or a valuable artifact. Epstein was very interested in hidden treasures, which added to the mystery of the island. It was as if he wanted to recapture the thrill of the old pirates. He loved the idea of finding something valuable that had a story from the past. According to an employee on the island, Epstein had a closet full of many white polo shirts, all in a medium size. At first glance, it might seem that Epstein simply loved this style and wanted lots of them, but the truth is more disturbing. Epstein had a strict rule about his shirts. He would never wear them more than once. After wearing them once, he would give them to his cleaning staff to use as cleaning rags. This strange habit surprised onlookers because it seemed excessive and wasteful. This leads us to wonder why Epstein went to such lengths to never wear a shirt twice. Was it a peculiar mania for hygiene reasons or something more sinister? Some have suggested that Epstein's strong desire for cleanliness and control may have played a role in his unusual behavior. He would discard his shirts after wearing them only once in order to keep his surroundings tidy and organized. This helped him feel in control of his surroundings and the people in them. Furthermore, disposing of these shirts could also be seen as a way to eliminate any potential evidence or DNA that could link him to his illegal activities. Epstein was known for engaging in illegal activities, especially on his private island, which was the center of his secret activities. By getting rid of the shirts, he could get rid of any evidence that could link him to his terrible acts. The cost of the Lacoste shirts is interesting. Each shirt was worth around $90, a fairly substantial amount of money. This makes us wonder about Epstein's finances and how far he was willing to go for his unusual habits. Epstein designed the island like a fortress. He made sure that only invited people could come, and it was very difficult for anyone to leave. The island was intentionally isolated from the rest of society. The only way to get there was by private boat or helicopter, which kept unwanted attention away. Epstein wanted a place where he could do terrible things without anyone finding out. Epstein prevented the women he exploited from speaking to anyone so that they could not escape his control. One of them tried to escape by swimming, but Epstein's security team quickly found her, showing that Epstein was constantly watching and controlling his victims. Epstein's island became a prison for the women who, according to him, were not allowed to leave without his permission. To ensure that he remained hidden and that the police could not enter, Epstein did some extreme things. He had security guards constantly patrolling the docks so that the police could not enter the island. And when the police tried to enter, his guards would say that it was private property and throw them out. He also hired Genty to install a private phone and internet network that would keep his activities hidden from the authorities. This made it extremely difficult to monitor his activities. He went to great lengths to remain isolated and private, which is surprising. The control he exerted over his abandoned island allowed him to commit crimes without consequence. He created a situation where his victims were trapped and could not call for help or leave. The island became a place where he could pursue his dark desires. Shielded from the outside world by secrecy and manipulation, Epstein's island contained some interesting and unusual paintings. These paintings depicted political figures in unusual and attention-grabbing ways. For example, there was a painting called The Parsing Bill that showed former President Bill Clinton wearing a blue dress and high heels while pointing directly at the viewer. The blue dress was likely a reference to the infamous blue dress from Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky. Another painting titled War Games depicted former President George W. Bush sitting on the floor of the White House playing with paper airplanes. In the painting, two fallen Jenga towers symbolize his use of the 9/11 attacks to justify the Iraq War. These paintings offer a unique insight into Epstein's views on political figures and their actions, often portraying them in provocative and somewhat childlike ways. Epstein's unusual paintings raise questions about his thoughts and interest in power dynamics. It seems that he was interested in politics and likely used these paintings to express his views on the world. Surprisingly, the island was not left empty after his arrest. On the contrary, it was actively guarded and protected by staff, even though Epstein himself was no longer there. When Inside Edition tried to approach the island, they were prevented from doing so by the vigilant employees tasked with guarding the property. Some TikTok users went to the island to check out its eerie surroundings, but were turned away by island staff. While Epstein is no longer there, the island is still under surveillance. This raises the question of who was in charge of the island when Epstein was in prison. We don't know if he had children, and we don't know who looks after the island, but the increased security suggests that someone is trying to keep the island's secrets safe. After extensive investigation, it's clear that this hidden paradise was where Epstein committed horrific crimes against young girls. According to Fox News, Epstein hired people on the island to find girls for his client, Thomas, and then took them on a boat called the Lady Glisten, which was named after his business partner Ghislaine Maxwell. The island was carefully designed to allow for these horrific acts while keeping them a secret from the outside world. The island served as a secret prison where Epstein could fulfill his twisted desires without being caught. Innocent young girls suffered unimaginable horrors, their innocence lost in horrific ways. Epstein used the island as a hidden staging ground for his depraved acts, far from the watchful eyes of society. Furthermore, the island's primary purpose was to provide a space for Epstein's wealthy clients to indulge their darkest desires without facing any consequences. It was a place where innocence was destroyed, lives were ruined, and vulnerable people were exploited for the pleasure of powerful individuals. Some believe that Epstein was able to escape back to the island and pretend to be dead. It is suspected that he may have swapped bodies with someone else, as he had the money to do so. There are unconfirmed reports and even a video that appears to show a lookalike on his private island. These unverified sightings fuel rumors about Epstein's true fate. Some people believe that Jeffrey Stin had ties to the Mossad, Israel's spy agency. They suspect that he was a spy who used his influence to obtain secrets from powerful people. There is also a theory that his death was staged to protect these secrets and allow him to continue his secret work. Now let's talk about the new owner of the island. What happened to Little St. James Island? It is a small island or islet measuring between 70 and 78 acres in size. Nestled in the United States Virgin Islands, it is located southeast of its neighboring island, Great St. James. Both islands are located off the southern coast of Greater St. Thomas, which is part of the East End subdistrict of St. Thomas. The Virgin Islands are special because they are actually tall mountains jutting out of the pristine Caribbean Sea. Imagine the breathtaking view of these large peaks rising out of the water. These islands have a varied geography. You'll find rugged seaside cliffs, lush forests in the high mountains, winding rivers, arid areas, and beautiful white sand beaches. It's like a paradise that hasn't changed in ages, where the beauty of nature is the main attraction. Little St. James boasts beautiful landscapes and its climate is influenced by the Alisios, which are strong winds near the equator. These winds keep the island in constant activity and shape its unique atmosphere. During the winter, the island experiences strong Alisios that bring gusty winds and less rain, making it dry as the winds blow away the clouds. But in the summer, the Alisios weaken, bringing more rain and gentle breezes. As a result, the island enjoys a mix of exciting and mild weather. As we explore the geography of Little St. James, we see the natural beauty of the island in its towering peaks, crashing waves, and the calming touch of the Alisios that make it a captivating and secluded paradise. In 1997, Little St. James was owned by venture capitalist Arch Cummin, who had put the island up for sale for a staggering $10.5 million. However, fate had other plans for this secluded paradise. In April 1998, a company called LSY LLC entered the picture and purchased the island for $7.95 million. And who was the sole member of this mysterious company? None other than Jeffrey Epstein himself. Epstein made Little St. James his primary residence, transforming the island into his personal playground. He spared no expense when it came to renovating the island's main house and enlisted the expertise of Edward Tuttle, renowned designer of the luxurious Aman Resorts. The result was a lavish and opulent residence that reflected Epstein's extravagant lifestyle. The island featured not only the main house, but also three guest cottages, a caretaker's cottage, a private desalination plant, a helipad, and a dock. It was a self-contained world, carefully designed to suit Epstein's every whim. Little St. James's allure of luxury and secrecy attracted a number of influential guests, including famed illusionist David Copperfield, who proposed to supermodel Claudia Schiffer on the island just 3 months after meeting her in 1993. But it wasn't just the entertainment world that flocked to the island. Victoria's Secret models were among the guests who visited Little St. James. Billionaire Lessis Wexner, founder of retail giant brand, also visited the island at least once. His relationship with Epstein raised eyebrows and fueled speculation about the extent of their relationship. Perhaps one of the most shocking revelations was the connection between Little St. James and high-profile figures in politics. Prince Andrew, Duke of York, visited the island at least once, according to former members of his staff. Their accounts, however, suggest that his visits were not limited to a single occasion. After Epstein's death, the islands were put up for sale for $125 million, but it proved difficult to find a buyer due to their connection to Epstein and the disturbing events that had taken place there. However, Stephen Dukoff, the billionaire who runs Black Diamond Capital Management, decided to buy the islands. Dukoff, a billionaire financier, made a name for himself running a company called Black Diamond, which specialized in fixing troubled companies. He faced challenges along the way, starting with jobs at major banks and rising through the ranks to become a senior vice president at Kidd Body & Company. Then, in 1995, he took a big step forward and founded his own company, Black Diamond. Although Dukoff was already quite wealthy while living in Connecticut, in 2011 he took a major turn in his life when he relocated to the U.S. Virgin Islands, where he now resides on private islands. Since moving to the area, Dukoff has been actively involved in the community, donating over $1.2 million to nonprofits and charities. This demonstrates his dedication to making a positive difference. Despite their turbulent history, Dukoff became interested in private islands because he saw the potential they had to help the region's economy. His plan for the islands is to build a luxurious 25-room resort, capitalizing on the Virgin Islands' popularity as a tropical vacation spot. The resort will feature top-notch amenities such as an heliport and private beaches for high-end travelers. Dukoff's plans don't stop at luxury. He wants to create an eco-friendly resort that cares about the environment. He has already donated to local charities dedicated to protecting the environment, showing that he is aligned with the needs of the region. It is impressive that a billionaire like him is so committed to the environment, especially after the destructive hurricanes of 2017. The islands are still recovering, and Dukoff's eco-friendly approach is a step in the right direction for sustainable development. But the question remains, will people want to visit a resort with a troubled history? The connection to Jeffrey Epstein and the disturbing events that have taken place on the islands could put potential guests off. Dukoff faces a difficult situation. He wants to improve the economy and create jobs in the area. But the fact that Epstein owned the place is a big issue. Whether the resort will function well depends on a few things, such as what people think and whether they are able to let go of the past. It remains to be seen whether Dukoff's eco-friendly plans will make people forget the bad reputation the islands had. The completion of the resort is a huge milestone, not just for Dukoff, but for the Virgin Islands as well. It could change the way people think about the islands and give them a new beginning. But it's also important to think about the victims of Epstein's horrific crimes, as part of a settlement with the Virgin Islands from the EEPU. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of the resort will go to a fund that helps people who have suffered sexual abuse. The creation of this fund is an important way to support those who have suffered at the hands of Epstein. As the resort is built, people around the world are watching closely. Its success or failure will not only affect Dukoff, but will also impact the future of the islands and how others view them. It remains to be seen whether Dukoff's vision becomes a reality. The road to opening the resort will surely be bumpy, but if it goes well, it could be a symbol of strength and recovery. If you enjoyed this video, click on the card that appears on your screen right now to watch more videos. M.